Lawmakers shut down public access to the House and Senate galleries and may shut down the two chambers entirely to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Maricopa County Recorder Adrian Fontes' response to the outbreak sent Attorney General Mark Brnovich rushing to court on Friday night to stop a plan to mail ballots to all Democrats in the county. And for those in the business of pressing palms and kissing babies, the coronavirus could throw their lives and this election season into disarray. We'll get into all that and more this week on The Breakdown. Welcome to The Breakdown, podcast listeners. I'm Julia Shumway, Senate reporter at the Arizona Capital Times, joined in a very small studio that is not letting us maintain the 3 to 5 feet in distance that public health experts recommend, by R.N. Kimball-Sanit, our House reporter, Dylan Rosenblatt, our Courts and Education reporter, Andrew Nikla, our Governor's Office reporter, and a very special guest this week, Piper Hansen, our intern, a wonderful reporter who has been joining us all week this week. Guys, it's her spring break and she spent it at the Capitol. We don't know what kind of masochism this is, but we're really glad she was down here with us this week. And what a week it's been. It's crazy to think that we started on Monday trying to figure out who in the legislature might have been shaking hands with Paul Gosar before he went into a self-quarantine over touching someone at CPAC who had been exposed to coronavirus. And we're ending it with lawmakers possibly planning to shut down their own session, at least for a few weeks. To start off, Governor Ducey declared a state of emergency on Wednesday. Andrew, you were there for that press conference. What did the governor have to say?
So this was his second address to the media about COVID-19 this week. He declared a state of emergency, like you said, and he issued an executive order. What the state of emergency does is it allows the state to mobilize as many people as they need to wherever they need. So that basically allows hospitals, healthcare providers, state healthcare leaders to waive regulations for, you know, hiring people who may need more certification to help in hospitals or help in leadership, because before a lot of these groups had no bench, they had no backup. And the executive order basically put more stringent requirements for nursing homes to like thoroughly screen people who either work there, live there, or who visit their family. And that also puts Arizona Department of Health Services Director Kara Crist in charge of anything that the state does that involves like responding to this. And just so Ducey nor Crist is instructing anyone to behave differently. They just want them to follow basic hygiene, common sense stuff. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Don't be too touchy with people. Don't shake hands, whatever. But they're not asking anyone to cancel events, although a lot of people have already.
And the state of emergency is necessary for the Department of Health Services to be able to access the Public Health Emergency Fund, which gets into the biggest thing the legislature did this week. Aaron, what did we pass in a rare moment of bipartisan unity on Thursday?
So on Thursday, as part of broader legislation that provides continuing authorization for, I guess, the existence of the Department of Health Services, lawmakers tacked on as an amendment two separate appropriations to the Public Health Emergencies Fund, which is operated by the department, a $5 million appropriation and a $50 million appropriation. The $5 million was explicitly requested by the governor in a meeting with legislative leaders. The $50 million was, I guess, their own interpretation of the needs of the state. So that money goes into this public health emergency fund, which the department can use with pretty broad discretion, so long as it pertains in this particular instance to the coronavirus and the state and its response to it.
So that was the biggest thing they did on Thursday, but they also change some of the House and Senate's rules, at least temporarily. What, provided we do, in fact, go back to session on Monday and throughout next week, what will the session look like to members of the public?
Well, it'll look increasingly digital. The legislative leaders decided to close the galleries from which the public can typically view legislative proceedings in both the House and Senate. To that public. They also sent out guidelines discouraging basically field trips, other public-facing events, just in general interpersonal interactions that require, I guess, physical presence. And we're now also seeing some committee chairs take, I guess, a bit of leeway in how they interpret those guidelines. For example, Representative Michelle Udall, who chairs the House Education Committee, and Representative Travis Grantham, who chairs the Regulatory Affairs Committee, both of which are slated to meet on Monday. Both of those lawmakers and committee chairs decided to close their committees to public testimony, which could be interesting given given the history of controversial and very crowded committee hearings that we've had so far this session.
In those two committees in particular, are there any bills that maybe would have had a whole lot of public testimony?
So for in the Education Committee, for example, there's one piece of legislation from Senator Sylvia Allen. It's since passed out of the Senate and is now being entertained in the House. That would basically change the formula allocation for sales tax revenues in education funding. That bill would change how that formula money is allocated so that 75% of the revenues that are already tagged for education funding go to the Classroom Site Fund, 5% to community colleges, and 20% to ABOR, the Arizona Board of Regents. Education experts and officials from both sides of the aisle and from all over the state are registered in mostly support to the bill, but there's dozens of people signed up, many of whom I imagine would be wanting to speak. This is big, complicated education funding legislation, which typically gets people kind of in a tizzy. Udall said that she will field public testimony in the form of emails up until Monday morning that can be entered into the record, but that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be read aloud, so it'll have a much diminished impact on the feeling of the committee relative to dozens of people coming up to the microphone to say their piece.
And how about lawmakers? So I have a couple senators in my chamber who do not plan on coming back. Is most of the House expected to be here on Monday?
As far as we can tell, yes. We've had a couple absences, but those are all fairly easily explained. Representative Cesar Chavez was out of the legislature yesterday. He said he has allergy symptoms. Representative Reginald Boulding was home with some kids of his that are sick. So far, nothing that would indicate that anybody in my chamber, at the very least, has coronavirus, or mostly just things that basically amount to big, if not slightly suspicious, coincidences.
And do want to be clear, Senator Heather Carter and Senator Paul Boyer do not have coronavirus, but they are social distancing themselves. This is a recommendation from public health officials. It's why a whole lot of companies are working from home. And a couple of our lawmakers have decided that they will be working from home. Senator Carter is the sole caretaker for her elderly mother. Senator Boyer has a one-year-old at home, and they want to stay away from their jobs until the epidemic has passed or until public health officials advise that it's safe to be around other people.
For the record, we would also welcome the opportunity to be able to stay away from our jobs for an extended amount of time if anybody has any suggestions as far as how to negotiate that with our bosses.
And then it turns out that while we may have some trouble in the Senate if we have a couple lawmakers not present at all, they can't vote on anything if they're not in the chamber, it may be a non-issue. So Senator Boyer told me that he would like the legislature as a whole to suspend, basically saying that if we don't allow public testimony, then there's no point in voting on anything. And I understand that one of the leaders in your chamber feels similarly, that he wants the legislature to take a break for a few weeks.
Representative T.J. Shope, a Republican from Coolidge, who serves as the Speaker pro tempore, he told reporters from the Capital Times that he is interested, if we go down this path, he would be interested in potentially suspending legislative activity as far as April, giving us ample time to try to wait things out. Even though he is in leadership, he doesn't necessarily speak for all of leadership or all of his caucus. So whether this is an official decision is unclear. Well, it's certainly not an official decision. Whether this is something that the legislature follows through with is unclear. Although, Julia, you did get some indication that this may be at the very least on the table.
Yes, and this is a really good reason why, if you are listening to this on Monday, pay attention to what we're reporting throughout the day on Monday. Senate President Karen Fan texted all 16 members of her Republican caucus to let them know that she will be going into a meeting with legislative leaders from both the House and the Senate to discuss their options as it relates to the budget and other pending bills. And she will keep them posted, and we will keep you posted.
And to be clear, we don't know what those options are. There's some speculation, but we don't really want to get into that and raise any alarms unnecessarily. Suffice it to say, they do seem to be taking this seriously.
That's the governor's catchphrase, but it works pretty well for the legislature in this case, too. And with that, I think we're going to wrap up the first half of our show and come back to talk all about elections, because the coronavirus, as much of an impact as it's having at the legislature, is having even more of one at the ballot box.
Can't wait for your weekly Arizona Capital Times? Then subscribe to the Yellow Sheet Report. The Yellow Sheet Report brings you the latest news and hottest political gossip in town every day, thanks to our trusty team of reporters and railbirds with their great tips. And with the legislative session seemingly never ending, the time is now to get in the know with the Yellow Sheet Report. Learn more at yellowsheetreport.com today.
Welcome back to The Breakdown. I'm still Julia Shumway, your Senate reporter, joined for this half of the show by Dylan Rosenblatt, Andrew Nikla, and Piper Hansen. While the legislature's been moving like crazy, we also have a presidential preference election scheduled for tomorrow. And in response to the coronavirus outbreak, Maricopa County Recorder Adrian Fontes decided to do something a little unusual, maybe a tad illegal if you listen to state officials. Piper, what did Adrian Fontes decide to do?
Yeah, so in response to public officials asking for social distancing, Adrian Fontes basically said that he was going to send out ballots to every registered Democrat in Maricopa County, and people who received those ballots would fill them out and they would drop them off at ballot centers, rather than going to polling locations and actually physically voting, where they would be in close contact with other people, probably touching people, touching things that other people had touched.
Many voters already get their ballots by mail, but to do so, you have to opt in to the permanent early voting list. What the county recorder wanted to do was mail out ballots to every registered Democrat who's not on the voting list, right?
Yeah, he wanted to send it out to everybody so that it could sort of be a little bit more controlled, so that social distancing could actually be upheld.
And Andrew, where were other county recorders on this when you spoke to them about what it will take to still hold the presidential preference election successfully?
So they were pretty much on the same page with one another. They didn't see what Fontes was asking for as necessary at all. I called a bunch of different county recorders who were on a conference call last week with Fontes, in which Fontes asked Katie Hobbs's staff to tell the secretary to talk to the governor to declare some sort of like limited emergency for the election to allow him to print out more ballots and to, you know, just send them to people who didn't get them, just so they were, you know, guaranteed at least a chance to vote. And her staff said that they would take that into consideration. They told the secretary, and I talked to the secretary. She said it wasn't necessary. No one else asked for it. And he went to the governor and asked for the same thing. His staff said they would take it into consideration, but they never acted on it. And during the call, county recorders were kind of confused over what exactly he was asking for. And one county recorder from Coconino, Patty Hansen, felt that, I mean, she's been in the job for over 3 decades. She felt that this was a sort of like display of Fontes's youth and inexperience. And she felt that he was being a bit too like reactionary, but she also was understanding that it's a very stressful job and many people want to control the uncontrollable and like predict the unpredictable and such a hard job. But she also felt that it wasn't necessary, but she understands why he may have asked for that.
All right. And while county recorders thought this wasn't necessary, state elected officials, including Katie Hobbs, the Democratic Secretary of State, and Mark Vernovich, the Republican Attorney General, also thought this was not only unnecessary, but a violation of state law. Dylan, what did Mark Vernovich end up doing on his Friday afternoon?
The Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich did what Brnovich is going to do, and he put a stop to Adrian Fontes' attempts to get all of the non-Pevel voters a mailed ballot before the preference election tomorrow. And by doing that, he filed a temporary restraining order with a judge in Maricopa County, and that county judge immediately signed it and put a halt to let Fontes send any new ballots that have not been sent. When I talked to Fontes earlier on Friday, he was telling me that his original intent for doing this was so that way all of these voters would receive their ballots Monday morning, this morning, if you're listening to it, the day that we post this podcast. And for the 99% that expected to get it on Monday, he said the remaining should get it on Tuesday morning, so they would have ample time to drop it off before the polls close at 7 p.m. Bernard said, under Arizona law, Recorder Fontes does not have legal authority to mail a ballot to voters who have not requested one. He used an Arizona state statute that expressly states that clause that Brnovich gave and brings us to where we are now, where these voters who are not on the early voting list won't be receiving their ballots in the mail.
And so at this moment, as we are recording on a rainy Friday evening, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Daniel Martin has signed the temporary restraining order, but we expect that the county recorder's office and Attorney General Mark Brnovich, or lawyers for them, will be in court arguing over the injunction he filed to make sure that these ballots aren't sent out.
Yeah, that's correct. And what could get really, if you're weird and think it's fun like me, it could get really fun is that the attorney who represents Maricopa County Recorder Adrian Fontes is the county attorney. So that's Alistair Dell. She also represents the Board of Supervisors, who are not happy with this, how everything unraveled, because Adrian Fontes asked them specifically if they would agree to this, and they said no. And lo and behold, he did it anyway. I talked to the county spokesman about that, and he was not thrilled that this whole thing was still happening. So if that comes into play and they're called as like a witness, or if they're a party to Attorney General Brnovich, then Alistair Dell would have two opposing sides that she has to represent. So I'm sure she would probably have to recuse herself from both of them.
That will definitely be fun to watch if it does end up happening. And beyond the presidential preference election, which will be held tomorrow, Tuesday, and will be over pretty soon, at least in Arizona, we expect Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders will still be duking it out nationally for a while longer. Arizona has a few more elections coming up and some really crucial deadlines for both candidates and ballot initiatives to get signatures in. Dylan and Andrew, I know you wrote a really great cover story this week on, like, did an amazing job on this story over the course of just a few hours on Thursday. Really impressed by that turnaround about just how the coronavirus could end up impacting elections here in Arizona. What was the big top line takeaway that you have?
I mean, I don't know if there's a bigger takeaway that I have than the fact that literally at the drop of a hat, something big could happen, and your editor tells you at 8 a.m. on Thursday morning, the day we go to print, hey, you're going to do a new cover story today, so get that in when you can. But that's showbiz, baby. Anyway, the big takeaways from what's to come in these elections and the deadlines that are coming up, signatures have to be collected for candidates by April 6th. That's for statewide and congressional candidates. There's another deadline in July for ballot initiatives where they have to collect a lot more signatures. But right now, given that Ducey called a state of emergency and the COVID-19, or also known as the coronavirus, is spreading very fast, everybody's taking precaution, and that could mean people aren't going to be out on the streets collecting signatures, or anybody is out there willing to give their signatures. So candidates who haven't collected enough may not be able to get onto the ballot. And the same issue may arise a couple months down the line when the July deadline comes around, that ballot initiatives could not get onto the ballot, because I don't see this resolving itself within the next couple of months. It's going to get worse before it gets better. and the August primaries, and then eventually the November election, like you said on the top of the episode, like, things are going to be in disarray.
So lawmakers, or wannabe lawmakers, and we saw a couple of them asking for this, have given themselves the ability to collect signatures online. But that's not true for ballot initiatives. Are there signature gatherers for ballot initiatives who are worried about getting the signatures they need because of this disease?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big concern. And one person who I, unfortunately, because it was a quick turnaround story, I didn't have the ample time to talk to, is Drew Chavez, who is the owner of Petition Partners, the biggest signature gathering group for ballot initiatives in the state. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but I did talk to some people who do some groundwork for collecting these signatures. I talked to Dawn Penich Thacker, who is running the grassroots movement to get signatures for her Save Our Schools Act, which is along the realm of the empowerment scholarship accounts. I'm not going to get into that too much, but she thinks that she has no problem, like, and she'll get all the signatures collected. But this was she told me that before Ducey issued a state of emergency, and she joked that the coronavirus could be the only thing that keeps her from collecting enough signatures for it. So there's people out there who are collecting signatures for the ballot initiatives, and you, like you said, you cannot do that digitally. A lot of these people who are doing groundwork and who are working on these campaigns can work from home, essentially, but you still cannot collect those signatures. So I feel like I'm going around in a circle just to say, no, you can't collect these signatures online, and these ballot initiatives who don't have enough will have a problem come July.
So beyond just collecting signatures to get either initiatives or candidates on the ballot, there are questions about what could happen when it comes to turnout in elections. Andrew, what did you hear from county recorders?
So Fontes and everyone else who I talked with said that turnout isn't going to be affected. I mean, so far it's not being affected. Fontes actually pulled up some numbers for me when we were talking. I mean, like, turnout for him and his county is actually higher than it was last election. So far they've got over 571,000 ballots, or sorry, so far 571,000 ballots were requested, and out of those, about 251,000 of those were returned. So about 44%. And that's, again, that number's higher than this past cycle. A majority of those people vote by mail anyways, and a majority of those who vote by mail are elderly, so that also helps subside any concerns that people had. But the only thing that they've done differently, really, is just, I mean, Fontes and Maricopa County have moved five of the polling locations that were previously in elder care homes, just as a precaution. His polling centers and every other polling center will have a drop-off available for people. They can just stay in their car, just avoid contact with anybody else. But if they do have to go in for any reason, they should know that, you know, that they are being instructed by Secretary Hobbs to, you know, disinfect as frequently as they can, have hand sanitizer, soap, everything else available for people.
There's an important distinction to be made that Fontes right now in Maricopa County is receiving a lot of good turnout from the ballots that have been mailed, but this is for the presidential preference election, and that's just for the Democratic voters. Once August and November come along, you have every single registered voter in the state who is going to have to be doing the same thing. And I don't know the number offhand. I know a majority of registered Arizona voters do vote by mail, or at least drop off their ballots on the same day. I'm really curious, and I haven't gotten the chance to ask any of these county recorders or Secretary Hobbs, but if they're expecting a lot more requests to join the permanent early voting list, given what's going on with the coronavirus before the August primary starts.
Right, and I think it will also be interesting to see when the legislature does return to doing business as usual, whether years-old requests from the Arizona Association of Counties to allow counties to be able to conduct all mail elections might find more success this year.
So with all these precautions that people are taking, at least for this election coming up tomorrow and down the line, it remains to be seen if the legislature is going to, you know, take some time off. us at the Capital Times and other papers in the state, at least in Phoenix, have been told to start working from home, which makes our job a little difficult. So we're going to have a split newsroom decision. Julia, I know you're of the small group of people who will still be down at the Capitol as things are going on.
As of right now, Aaron and I will still be working at the Capitol as long as the legislature is in session. If they decide that they are going to take a break, we will be working from our homes, just as you and Andrew will be working from your homes.
I get my dog with me, though, so I'm low-key, actually, I'm high-key excited that I get to spend some time with her rather than, you know, down at the Capitol for 10-plus hours a day and then come home to her being angry.
I am a little jealous of that, given that, yes, you get to hang out with a dog, I get to hang out with Senator Sonny Borelli.
But anyway, the reason why we bring this up is because we may not be recording, at least for the near future, just because not all of us are going to be in the same room at the same time.
A good way to know what's happening with our podcast, but more importantly, what's happening with news at the House and the Senate and the Governor's Office and various state agencies and the state of Arizona in general, is to keep an eye on the Arizona Capital Times, azcapitaltimes.com, the Yellow Sheet Report, and the Legislative Report. And with that, we will be back next week, or maybe in a few weeks. Who knows? Talk to you then.
Don't get coronavirus.